are doing well. And not only do we have right here live in the studio DJ Danielson, but in fact we have extra special guest, correspondent extraordinaire, independent medio radioista, doing all kinds of fun stuff. You want to say what's what? Who we have here? Who is this? What's going on, Daniel?
Pues,
who is that sitting next to you?
Vlax is here with us. He's been with us in the past on la radio. También Radio Bilingüe, también Radio Free Speech Radio News, también en la red, en warscape.info. But Vlax is a digital artesano.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that, but yeah.
So he's here to talk about the narco guerra in Mexico, and we're going to... Hablamos el Spanglish fluidamente por unos minutos.
Yeah.
A ver lo que pasa.
That's right. We're going to try to now transformar nuestras palabras. For those of you who don't know, we speak the ghetto version of English and Spanish, known as Spanglish, here at Radio Libre. Entonces, aquí tenemos el señor, artista independiente, digital, periodista de radio de Oaxaca, México, ¿no? ¿Eres de allí o
sí,
solo vives
allá? No, vivo ahí en Oaxaca desde hace ya varios años, pero originalmente soy de la Ciudad de México, soy chilango. Pero, bueno, estoy viviendo ahí en la ciudad de Oaxaca desde hace ya más de... ya casi 15, 20 años menos, como unos 13, 15 años. Y I'm coming here to the United States not so much, pero pues cada vez que puedo vengo to show my work and to share my feelings about what's happening in Mexico and especially with the social struggles in Mexico. Pero ahora lo que está pasando es que the narco war is also, is also a way to hide what's happening in the rest of the social issues in Mexico. So I'm trying to mix the journalism, the radio journalism that has been doing, lo que he venido haciendo como community free radio supporter and active radialista, pero al mismo tiempo I'm trying to mix with the digital media. The digital media is so fancy stuff and so shitty words to say that I'm just playing with my computer, So it's just
shh, you're gonna blow it for the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Quiet.
And I got a grant for that.
Yeah, exactly. That's where that, go for it.
You just ruined many people's careers.
Yeah, exactly.
Ya están enojados.
Yeah.
Los van a llamar. Increíble, 15 años viviendo en Oaxaca. Has visto algunos cambios sociales y estoy seguro algunas situaciones muy interesantes, vamos a decir, ¿no?
Sí, tiempos históricos, ¿no? Bastante, sí. Y sobre todo me ha tocado ver lo que es el aplastamiento de las rebeliones populares de los últimos 10 años, que han existido importantes movimientos sociales en Oaxaca muy conectados a la Autonomic Rebellion que está pasando en all over South Mexico. Uh-huh. Entonces, lo que está pasando en Oaxaca es just un example. Es solo un pequeño ejemplo de comunalidad, le dicen allá. De comunalidad concept is... it's a different approach to the community as itself, pero there's a lot of indigenous communities in Oaxaca, especially in Central Valley, in the Central Valley, que están tratando de, to have their own way to do their own lives, especially their own way to manage the natural resources. Because Oaxaca is so rich in natural resources, mines. There's a lot of investment of corporate Canadian mine investments. Entonces, hay mucha gente en Oaxaca que está opuesta a esto, está tratando de luchar en contra de esto desde hace muchos años, sí, pero ahora está un poco más visible, ¿no? Digamos.
Adentro de esto, no, esta lucha más grande, más popular, ¿no? Hay muchas diferentes luchas que llegan a tener las condiciones que hay una gran lucha, ¿no? Que hay una solidaridad y gente organizando entre ellos, conectando diferentes campañas y luchas. popularmente, ¿no? Ahí en el calle, ahí no solamente en el trabajo, ahí en el campo, pero también en la ciudad. Ahí por ellos que ya no saben, ¿no? La historia de Oaxaca, tienen una gran historia de resistencia. Muchas partes de Oaxaca y no Chiapas nunca fueron conquistados por los españoles. Esta legacía de resistencia no es algo nuevo, ¿no? Pero sigue siendo porque vamos a decir, la sistema incorporada, ¿no? Quiso poner su ideología, su sistema adentro de esas personas y han resistido desde, you know, 1049.
Sí,
1492.
Sí, es cierto.
Yeah. Sí. Está bonita, pero ahí estabas y ahí estaba también el Danielson durante algunos tiempos después de la rebelión más reciente, ¿no?
En 2006, entre junio del año 2006 y diciembre de ese mismo año, ocurrieron diversos acontecimientos en la ciudad de Oaxaca, principalmente, aunque en realidad sucedió en todo el estado de Oaxaca. Oaxaca, es importante decirlo, son 570 municipios. Un municipio es like a county here in the United States. Entonces, si puedes imaginar un pueblo con 570 municipios oficialmente reconocidos y la mayor parte de estos municipios or counties son elegidos vía usos y costumbres, que as you are saying, la principal social resistance en Oaxaca es que there's a few but deepest and important roots that never fueron conquistados, and the asamblea, the popular assembly is one of these. Y la asamblea popular de los pueblos de Oaxaca fue the most recent expression of that. Entonces, pero it's still active every day, la asamblea de pueblos indígenas en prácticamente 570 lugares diferentes del estado de Oaxaca. Define la vida política, la vida comercial, la vida religiosa, etcétera. Entonces, la asamblea de pueblos, la asamblea en donde para participar solo tienes que estar ahí, vivir ahí y participar de lo común, del pueblo, de las necesidades de la comunidad, y eso te da derecho a voto, digamos, tienes voz. Entonces es un distinto tipo de ciudadanía, digamos, o de pertenencia. Your identity is very different, you know. Entonces, sí, es cierto, como bien decías, hay lugares en Oaxaca que nunca fueron conquistados por la civilización occidental formalmente hablando, ¿no? Porque sí llegó la Iglesia Católica, ¿no? Sí pusieron iglesias, etcétera, sí impusieron el idioma español, etcétera. Pero a la fecha, Oaxaca es uno de los lugares de México en donde existen aproximadamente 16 diferentes grupos indígenas, cada uno con su propia lengua, cada uno con su propio vestido, cada uno con su propia identidad músico-cultural, digamos, ¿no? Sus propios bailes, su propia manera de expresar su realidad inmediata, es decir, su ambiente, que muchas veces es un ambiente natural, montañas, mucha biodiversidad, etcétera, y la comida, ¿no? Por supuesto, que también es parte muy fuerte de la identidad oaxaqueña. Entonces, sí, esas son el tipo de cosas que nunca han sido conquistadas y que me atrevería a decir que es imposible conquistarlas porque muchas de esas están viajando. They are transnationals here in the United States. A lot of people are saying that here is the Oaxaca, California, you know.
For the, hay un chingo de oaxaqueños aquí.
Hay un chingo de oaxaqueños, ¿no?
Es cierto.
Entonces es popularmente conocido como también el segundo Oaxaca, ¿no? En California está la mayor cantidad de oaxaqueños fuera de Oaxaca que en Oaxaca. Entonces it's a really interesting situation.
Interesante, sí. No he sabido. Pues adentro de esta lucha social, ¿no? Y esta historia de conquista en esto, nuestra situación que tenemos hoy, ¿no? Ahorita acabo de terminar la conferencia internacional, ¿no? Del hablando del Summit de los Américas, ¿no?
Oh, ya.
Y estaba un tema más Bueno, atrás del escándalo de la prostitución con el servicio secreto, atrás de esto, la tema más grande que están hablando de es la guerra contra los narcos y la guerra contra el narcotraficante y también estabas enfocando en este tema muchísimo ahí en su trabajo de Warscape.info también, ¿no? ¿Puedes practicar un poquito de estos temas? Like, introducir la guerra, like, la narcoguerra, ¿no? Sí, que tenemos en México, porque mucha gente sí tal vez entiende que está mal, pero no entienden que sí están ahora en una situación de guerra.
De guerra.
Y esta relación entre los narcos y el gobierno, que estaba como no mirar un ojo a los narcos, ¿no? El gobierno estaba mirando a otro lado, diciendo que, oh, sí, lo que yo no veo, yo no es mi negocio, ¿no? Pero ahora, no, es guerra.
Ya, yeah, es guerra.
Es guerra y es guerra por control de las rutas y por los carteles y todo. Entonces,
sí,
habla un poco de lo que has vivido, lo que has,
sí, sentido. Sí, efectivamente, y es un buen inicio lo que mencionas de la Cumbre de las Américas, que se está llevando a cabo en estos días en Cartagena, Colombia. Curiosamente, intencionadamente los dueños del dinero, los grandes poderosos, los industriales de la guerra, se reúnen en uno de los lugares donde primero operó el Plan Colombia, en la zona de Cartagena de Indias. Recordemos que Cartagena de Indias fue uno de los primeros lugares donde la corona española impuso el colonialismo formalmente hablando. Y hoy, más de 500 años después, se reúnen de nuevo ahí los dueños del dinero para definir el futuro de sus propios territorios, ¿no? Porque en realidad lo que están haciendo con la narcoguerra es redefinir sus propios territorios, o lo que ellos consideran es su territorio, porque precisamente el proyecto que yo estoy tratando de difundir, Warscape Sonata, que lo pueden encontrar muy fácilmente en el internet si ponen warscape.info o también balaperdida.info. If you speak English, it's really easy, warscape.info. Si hablas español, balaperdida.info. Entonces, desde ahí you can find audios, videos, more about my work, more about how to connect with me, etc. Pero the important issue here is que the narco war is absolutely redefiniendo lo que es el territorio mexicano in terms of geopolítica del Estado, digamos, y también está redefiniendo.
And more about narco war at a later time. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. Coming up next, so it doesn't look like we're doing much broadcasting today. Hopefully we're still streaming. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We're going to be doing some look backs over the last 2 weeks and maybe some call-ins. Call-in numbers here are 831-427-3772, 427-3772. Give it a try, and you might get through. Stay tuned.
Who has been singing around here on and off. He comes into town when they're arresting people for sitting on the sidewalk.
And let me clarify that. This is an introduction to Mark Levy, who is a folk singer who sang at the Keith McHenry rally. We're going to open the show with a little of the song that, or actually perhaps a lot of the song that he sang on March 25th and some of the subsequent discussion that happened there. This is a follow-up to my previous program where we did a fairly complete coverage of McHenry's speech. He's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, and a guy who's been around the block and a number of blocks a number of times.
Mark Levy, has been singing around here on and off. He comes into town. Yeah. All right, so grab those raffle tickets. In the meantime, we're going to grab Mark Levy, has been singing around here on and off. He comes into town when they're arresting people for sitting on the sidewalk. Okay. He comes into town when they're arresting people for sleeping or for serving free food. And he's got some great songs that are actually Santa Cruz specific, as well as broader songs around civil rights or lack thereof for homeless people. Mark, you want to say anything about what you're doing?
I'm going to see if I have room to do this. Yeah, these are participatory songs. They have a... Let me... the mic over here, please.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, my guitar gets jealous if it's not mic'd. Okay. So your part, you remember the, everybody remember the show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous? Yeah. This is in the 80s, right? Things haven't changed all that much. But I rewrote this song. I rewrote it to be Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. So that is your refrain. Okay, Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. So we'll try that here. Let's go. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Can you do that with me?
Here we go. Wait, this
has got to
go up a little bit.
Can I think of an awesome way to do that?
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to be slowly moving to the alleyway, so after this first number, help by standing up. Why? Not everybody has to do it. To make room for food, we have to up the audience to set up.
Well, you'll hear it. If you want to sing along, that's up to you. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Coming soon to you and me. Style, but Robin Leach might be surprised at what I see before my eyes. I'm watching Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Soon, you and me. Spare some change, I need a bite to survive an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, sleeping on the city streets. Sing it with me now. Soon. 15 years ago. Me and my friends, we shop downtown, and sometimes we just hang around. But when we get tired and we want to sit, the cops say get up and move it. Cause there's no sitting in the city of Santa Cruz with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sight gurus, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Well, you better watch out where you set your tail, or you might spend 6 months sitting in jail. If you bum spare change, you might pay a fine, cause being poor is now a crime. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sight gurus, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. You're breaking the law if you try to sit. We're not gonna stand for it. This sitting law didn't get my vote, so we're gonna sit down and rock the boat. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz with its redwood trees and its ocean view. It's the home of surfers and sackaroos. There ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz with its redwood trees and its ocean view. The home of surfers and sackaroos. But there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. And I understand that also means vacant banks.
Yeah, they say no.
Wise too. Been traveling around a bit, and I've stopped at many different Occupy encampments around the country, and gather people's stories as to why they're getting together. I think it's the best thing to happen as a movement in this country in 40 years. I know Occupy Santa Cruz has been very active while I've been gone, but I've been stopping in and checking and talking with people in other areas of the country, and this is a song I wrote called called Occupy, Liberate, Own Your World. And it's got an easy part for everybody to do if you'll stick with me. It's like when I say step one, you say occupy. When I say step two, you say liberate. And when I say step three, you say own your world. So we could try that. I know people getting hungry. I am too. So there's a lot going on here. But try this out with me. Step one, occupy. Step two, liberate. Step three, own your world. Try it again. Step one, occupy. Step two, liberate. And step three, own your world. She got addicted from her home. Her family had forever. Her children had.
Filing for divorce, as a cap for welfare rolls, everybody beyond.
and my apologies for the bad quality, both the no quality of the broadcast. And I hear some people are having trouble actually getting the stream as well. I hope that the caller who just called in is now able to check us out on the stream. Still having a hard time letting people know how to get to the stream's address, which may not be helpful today. It's possible the stream is not actually streaming, which it sounds, I think it is, but I just am not sure. I'm taking a peek here at the stream. Let's take a peek here. There it is. You know, I think if you go to tunein.com, the actual stream is tunein.com/radio/FRSC-S47254, but that's kind of hard to write down quickly, isn't it? But I think tunein.com radio FRSC might get you in that general vicinity. Give it a try. And I'm going to keep working on it. You can also go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and the stream is specified there. So you can either link to it directly or you can plug it into your browser. huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F, Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. Plus some really cool articles, a bit dated perhaps, although some more recent ones have recently shown up around homeless civil rights for poor people. That's what this show is about, civil rights for poor people, or the struggle to get them. And that's what we're going to be talking about, really, in terms of laws that criminalize the homeless, police abuse, prosecutions of people who publicize these issues. That's the Santa Cruz 11, of which I'm one. And just to make an announcement that I'm going to be repeating throughout the show, just for those who haven't streamed in, since I don't think haven't got any tune-ins at the moment, but there's a protest tomorrow, actually a press conference by the Brown Berets, who have come out in strong support of the Santa Cruz 11, urging DA Bob Lee to drop the charges and the community to unite against these prosecutions, which are claiming that we are felony vandals, felony trespassers, who should and could be subject to up to 7 years in prison for being in a building taken over by some folks for 3 days in a peaceful occupation when they attempted to turn it into a community center, according to police reports and their own accounts. So, this protest will be tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the courthouse, and everyone's invited to come. There's going to be speakers. There may be a piñata party where we may be whapping the piñata, which is, of course, a traditional thing that I used to enjoy as a kid really a lot, when you would blindfold a person, they would walk around trying to hit this kind of big papier-mâché. Usually it was a donkey, but in this case it's a figure of Wells Fargo Bank. You hit the bank and try to hit the jackpot, and out comes candy. I think in this case, I don't know what they got in there. It could be a gold bullion or, you know, who knows, $1,000 bills, or more likely some candy treats. So check it out tomorrow, 2 o'clock at the courthouse, and there'll be a march at 2:30, again raising the issue of informing the community of the kind of wasted money and time, and also the chill that is being put into the community through these prosecutions of 11 people. When you had hundreds of people coming in and out of this vacant bank that had been held vacant for 3.5 years. You can read a lot more about it at santacruz11.org. That's www.santacruz11.org. There was a lot of activity on May Day in Santa Cruz, not as much as up in Oakland or in San Francisco for sure. Much more subdued, I must say, but more activity than I don't know, the 2 or 3 weeks preceding it. I guess that's something. I'm going to play a bit of the tape that I made on that day. I was kind of wandering around. There was supposed to be a large student contingent. There turned out to be a rather small student contingent. That happens sometimes. And, well, there were people who were expressing themselves. There were people out on the streets. I'm going to be passing on a little of that now. And if you have any comments yourself and you want to call in, I want to remind you again, the call-in number is 427-3772, area code 831-427-3772.
The Sub Rosa May 1st, about 4:40.
And, of course, there's always the occasional interview, and this is one of those interviews, actually, of, well, it's self-explanatory.
Talking with Isaac Collins, or actually Lyrical Eye. And Lyrical Eye, you were in a non-lyrical jail cell for a while there.
Yes, I got arrested for possessions of sale of marijuana-laced product. It was 11:59 PC. That's what they're charging me with.
That's some sort of felony.
Felony, yes. Yeah.
And what? That's not a controlled substance.
Yeah, they're trying to get it as a controlled substance, marijuana lease product. So.
Now what? Tell me what were you doing with this stuff? Was selling it to 3-year-olds, like injecting it into babies?
No, I was selling it to university.
We're talking. I'm sorry. We interrupted the tape at this point for non-commercial interjections. What were you doing up there, if you wish to say, at the where did all this happen?
This happened at the Meadow.
And this is up on UCSC campus?
Yes.
The infamous day of 420, the many, many celebration-ish type day?
Yes.
A lot of marijuana smoking?
Yes.
Now, there were many other people. Were there other people selling marijuana up there?
Yeah.
What were they selling?
They were selling marijuana-laced products and stuff.
I see. And what sort of products were they selling? Did you sample their wares, perhaps?
No, I didn't.
But now, did the police officers come up to you and just sort of, what did they say to you?
They just said, are you selling? And I was like, no. And then,
they didn't believe you.
They didn't believe me, so they searched me. And
did you get permission to search?
At that point, yeah.
Big mistake.
Yeah, but I had evidence. And, yeah.
So, what was the reaction of the crowd around you, and about what time of day was it?
It was about 1:30 when I was busted, and the crowd around me, people were saying, let him go, let him go, let Isaac go, let him go.
And how many cops were there?
There were about 6.
And these were all Santa Cruz police officers?
No, these are university police officers.
I see. And did they have any comments? Did they pause to have a puff of Keith, perhaps?
Nah, not at all. Let's see. No.
And what happened next?
They arrested me.
And how did that involve us giving you a citation and asking you to appear in court in a few weeks?
I went to jail. And then
they handcuffed you?
They handcuffed me, yes, really hard. My hand is still hurting from the handcuffs. And yeah, they sent me jail for 3 days.
And you're an African-American guy.
Yes, I'm an African-American.
You, of course, were arrested with all the other 1,500 marijuana sellers. There was a big mass roundup.
Yeah, but I was the only one they put in the newspaper.
So how many others were arrested?
Well, I don't know. All I know is I was arrested.
Was anyone in the paddy wagon or the police car with you?
No. I was the only person that went down that day.
So apparently they had a special interest in you.
Yeah.
Now, is that because of your well-known poetic bent? They don't like poets up there with the marijuana crowd?
Yeah, because my loudness at that day was a little loud, so.
Wasn't it sort of a festive day?
Yeah, it was a very, very festive day. Mm-hmm. You know.
And you're also, of course, an Occupy Santa Cruz activist. Do you think that was involved at all?
Probably is. I don't know yet, but probably.
Now, also, your skin is a somewhat darker hue than mine. I think that might have had something to do with it. Were there a lot of white boys around? You were one of the few non-white boys?
I was one of the few non-white boys there, yes.
Did you see these same officers ignoring other people who were doing the same thing that they alleged you were doing, selling marijuana?
Yes. Yes.
They were selling marijuana-laced products?
Yeah. Yes.
And what did these good UCSC cops do?
They didn't do nothing to them. They just got me because I was not a student there.
And how did they know you were not a student?
Asking me a bunch of questions that I asked and,
Instead of saying, am I free to go? I have nothing to say. I'd like to speak to an attorney. Otherwise, back off and face the wrath of the millions.
Yep.
So you were taken to jail?
Yeah, I was taken to jail, and it was on 4 He was on, I was taking the job on 420. I got out on 422nd. I'm on my second week since I've been out. I got to go to court next week, May 8th.
At what time?
At 8 o'clock in the morning.
And whose court?
Santa Cruz County Court.
I mean, do we know a department?
I don't know. I think it's probably in the criminal
defense. His name is Collins?
Collins, yes.
And have you been before a court at all? Were you just released before going to court?
I was released before going to court.
Did you have to bail out?
No, I owed IOR'd out.
But it took them 2 days to release you?
2 days to release me.
Is that because they just so wanted to hear your poetry in jail? Or the guards were fond of you? Or...
Yeah, they wanted to keep me in there just to guess for me to learn a lesson.
I see. Or for them to learn the wonder of the street lyric.
Yes, yes.
So did you teach them, or the guards now wrapping it up, so to speak?
I was kind of quiet. I wrote in there, but I didn't do too much. I was just more scared about what was the charges and how long I was going to be in there for.
Did you meet any fellow marijuana prisoners?
Nah, I was the only person in there for some marijuana.
What other kind of crimes did you find people were there for?
I saw people in there for violent offenses, against hitting their girlfriends, against gang violence, a lot of robbery, you know, worse things than I was in there for.
Did you pick up any tips for a future career of path, perhaps?
No, I didn't. I learned one thing. It's not worth it to be in jail for over a marijuana charge when there's other people in there worse than you.
Did you form any connections with people that you would later contact them by, you know, email or by, I guess you can't get email in jail, but...
I tried to do that, but when I got out, I lost my lyrics and stuff. After being in there, I was kind of shocked and misplaced the poetry and stuff I wrote in there, so...
And you don't remember it yet?
Nah, but I've been writing, but nah, don't...
Anything you wish to tell us at this point, poetically speaking?
Life is what you make of it, and use your talents to get you out of your conditions instead of trying to find a quick way to make a quick buck.
We've been talking with...
A.K.A. Lyrical Eye, or Isaac Collins, whatever you want to call.
And you'll be showing up, making a special guest appearance in court at...
May 8th, 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 a.m.
And you'll be charged with...
suspicion of felony.
You look pretty suspicious to me with those dark glasses there, Lyrical.
Thank you, Mr. Robert North.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. I.
Yeah.
All right, so we're talking with...
And before we go on to the next interview, just a comment or two. I've actually talked about this case a little bit. Before I interviewed Isaac, or Lyrical I, and I ran into him at the Sub Rosa right before the May 1st day activities downtown, I'd read about him in the Santa Cruz Urinal, Sentinel, as they call themselves, and it really was interesting. He was the first person I've ever remember hearing of in Santa Cruz at the 420 event, the annual mass smokeout that happens up at UCSC in the Great Meadow, who was arrested for felony sales of marijuana products, which to me was, and I've had this feeling of it more recently about other things, quite ominous, showing a really expansive and nasty repressive attitude on the part of the police in considerable variance with, I think, the Santa Cruz ethic. The idea that what is done, what was being done commonly by lots of people there and is done once a year, the whole idea of the drug war, of course, is not just absurd, but a crime in and of itself of a magnitude far outweighing anything that criminals, the so-called criminals who are even the drug lords, are engaged in. The federal government and the smaller governments, state and local governments, the number of lives ruined is just immense. And the number of people being arrested for marijuana prosecutions is going up. 2 years ago, it was going up in Santa Cruz. I can't speak to the nearest latest statistics. I should be turning in Public Records Act requests, but generally I'm doing other things. Actually, I did turn in a couple last week, which I'll talk about, but not about marijuana. So I'm concerned that that a small kind of medieval segment, a reefer madness mentality in a certain portion of the police department is controlling now the behavior. Now, the police department, it has to be said, that arrested these folks was the UCSC police, which are generally worse than the Santa Cruz Police Department. They are notorious, particularly up in Berkeley, but also in Santa Cruz. They were notorious for torturing students in the Tent University arrests with pain compliance holds and other points since then. And previous in Elfland back in the 90s and the tree sit situation a couple years ago. The UCSC police are sort of akin to the UC Davis police that were out there pepper spraying an unresisting, peacefully protesting UC Davis students in the notorious scene that people saw on video back in, I guess, October, November of last year in the Occupy movement. But here we have an example of a guy, African-American, longtime stalwart with Occupy Santa Cruz, who was part of the day and night Occupy movement in front of the county building, the OccuDome, the information table, and so forth, and still is attending the General Assemblies, probably one of the few African-American individuals in that group. He is singled out by UCSC police, and not just having his day ruined and being harassed, not just having his property confiscated, not just being arrested and not just being charged, but being charged with felony possession of marijuana or a controlled substance with intent to sell. Here's a caller. Maybe we can get some enlightenment from this caller. Yo, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, caller.
I am. Are you sure I'm on Free Radio Santa Cruz? You seem to have stumbled over that introduction. I expected a little more fanfare.
Well, you know, you're probably not actually going out over the air, but you are going out over the stream. And let me put it this way. The most important person in town, I am able to hear you.
Oh, well, that's sufficient for me, then.
You must be Dr. Steve Plaitch. What exactly are you? What are you a doctor of, Steve?
Of jurisprudence, my friend.
What does that mean? Can you translate that into English for the plebs?
A doctor of law. I could put that on my license plate if I had it.
Doctor of law. Indeed.
Doctor of law.
You should be ashamed of yourself for giving you mixing up your name with the laws of this country. I got to tell you.
I am the laws of this country.
Unfortunately, I understand you're challenging some of the laws of this country.
Yes, we are. Matter of fact, we certainly are. I did manage to get some flyers for the press conference tomorrow, which I'm sure that you announced several different times in support of the Santa Cruz 11 to our good friend Chris, who is at this moment out distributing flyers all over town.
Yeah, I did mention it briefly. I mentioned that it's happening at 2 o'clock, not at 1 o'clock, as City on a Hill Press falsely reported in its current issue, unfortunately. 2 o'clock at the county building. Do you know if it's at the Water Street side or at the front of the building? Do you have any idea?
No, I was thinking it was at the front of the building.
The entrance where people normally come in and out.
The entrance, yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so that's where people should be. You may have to check both sides of the building, but that's probably where it's going to be. We've been talking, Steve, about the arrest of Isaac Collins, Lyrical Eye, for felony marijuana possession with intent to sell or selling with intent to smoke or whatever the hell it is. But he was held on a felony for 2 days. It was an interview I just played from May 1st. Do you have any thoughts about that yourself?
Well, I think that it's unfortunate that, you know, Isaac was targeted maybe for some kind of arrest. There's 1,000 people up there, and he was, one of the few, if not only, person arrested. I just don't understand, how that kind of a situation developed. But we're all in support of Isaac. I did talk to him myself on Tuesday, get an idea of what he was experiencing and what he's going through. My feeling is, and my knowledge of Prop 36 law here in California, is that worst case scenario, he won't be sent to jail time, because under Prop 36, he's a nonviolent drug offender, that the courts have no discretion in terms of sentencing. They must grant probation. So he seemed a little relieved from that. And hopefully they will, reduce or dismiss the charges entirely.
He will be going to court on the 8th of May, Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. For those who are interested, Collins, it's just an arraignment, and often I advise people to not bother with arraignments. But on this day, there's also a second incident happening, a second court appearance, that of Bradley Stewart Allen and Alex DeRosi, in what are rather important motions by their attorneys to first to dismiss the charges and also to claim selective enforcement. Amendment. Any comment about those charges? Are those?
I won't comment about
violence.
The substance of those motions, but we'll certainly be there in support of Alex and Bradley, and we should go early and be in support of Isaac as well.
That's it. So it'll be Isaac at 8 o'clock in a department to be announced, and then it'll be Bradley and Alex at 9 o'clock in Department 6 for those who are interested. And that's Tuesday, May 8th in the morning. So.
Yeah. So we'll all be there, and hopefully be there in numbers so we can show our support for all those fellows.
And numbers apparently is going to be the word with all these flyers. I'm not just exaggerating. This is really probably the best flyer I've seen. I'd say the best flyer I've seen this year for the Santa Cruz 11 defense, and as being one of the 11, I think we should make you an honorary member of the Santa Cruz 11 for all your work, Steve. Would you like to be one of the Santa Cruz? You could be the 12th member of the.
I am happy to be the spokesperson for the supporters of the Santa Cruz 11.
That's very prudent of you.
You know, that's sufficient for me in terms of Tyler right now. I get a title bump perhaps later. Depending on how situations develop. But, no, you're right. It's a wonderful flyer. It's really, I think, strong and to the point and focused on what we need to do to support Santa Cruz 11, sign the petition, you know, do the things that we need to do, and do them in numbers to change public opinion about the wisdom of even continuing with these cases.
Yeah, there's going to be, if you want to actually see the flyer, you can go to the Santa Cruz 11 website, which is santacruz11.org. That's all, that's one word spelled out, 11, santacruz11.org. And I recently, the increasing number of organizations are signing on to urge DA Bob Lee to dismiss these charges. Particularly, it seems a very strange prosecution with the kind of fumbling behavior by his underling, Rebecca Young. I'm not trying to be mean to her. It's just my impression. She really is, she's facing batteries of lawyers, and she's losing in court. And it's not that I'm sympathetic. I think she should have, the whole thing should have been dumped to begin with. And in a way, it's a good comeuppance for the DA's office, but it's also a big waste of money.
Yeah.
It
is published puzzling to most observers as well, because I guess Rebecca Young is relatively new to the DA's office. She's a former journalist, which doesn't disqualify her as a barrister or, as a lawyer. But nevertheless, to just have her out there in isolation without any junior or senior deputy DA to at least assist her in some way or another seems a bit unusual to me.
It's almost like it's a token prosecution in a way. It's like she's being, it's sort of a warning, but they're saying, well, we're not that serious. What do you make of it, Steve?
Well, I think they're all too serious. I think that just the kind of anguish and mental suffering that they put these defendants through already, yourself included, is just unconscionable. And if they're doing it just because they think they need to have a show trial to satisfy the community, then that's particularly egregious behavior. And I can't understand why they would even bother doing that.
But the problem, of course, is that there are no real sanctions that can be applied against the district attorney's office for doing this, right?
Not to my knowledge. If you were to go through a trial and be found innocent and had a finding of factual innocence by the court, there's a possibility of some civil remedy, but that kind of thing is a long way off and very difficult to litigate, and it costs to litigate, and most defendants, even if they are acquitted at trial, don't really pursue that kind of remedy.
On the upside, I did speak to some folks up at the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, which is a fairly large and well-established group, been there for 25 years or so at least, and they seemed interested in possibly joining on to the list of supporters. I'm not sure they're going to send down any lawyers, guns, or money, but but their name may be added to the, they want the 1,200 or 1,300 people that are now on the petition urging that these charges be dropped.
Absolutely. And as I was telling you earlier in the day, I did an interview with a woman from KBOO in Portland, Oregon, and they are very much supportive of Santa Cruz 11. They're posting everything they can find that's on Indie Bay or anywhere else in support of the 11. Briefly, when she went on the air, she knew more about these charges and more about the substance of what was going on here than some people in town did. So they are really engaged in the sport of Santa Cruz 11.
I had a similar experience. I talked to a fellow named Mark Garcia up in the Coalition about an hour and a half ago, and he knows me from years ago. His brother was shot by police, shot dead
oh my,
like
uh,
a decade
decade ago, and I think it was San Francisco police or Oakland police or something like that. And so we were engaged in sort of urging police reform and investigation of that incident. But he immediately, I was suddenly a revered figure because I had been plucked out of the hat for prosecution in the Santa Cruz 11 case. You know, I'm no better or no worse than anybody else who walked into that building to just, you know, see what was going on or report on what was going on or even express sympathy for what was going on, you know. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the idea that some of us conspired and did all this stuff. Anyway, I mean, there seems to be general knowledge up there of, you know, and growing knowledge of different places of this kind of really interesting, massive overcharging of people, whether it's Isaac being overcharged for marijuana up on 420 day at UCSC. I mean, come on, man.
It seems to be a very unique situation where people are very interested in getting all the facts and acquiring the facts and engaging on a level that is completely outside what you might normally see in, you know, some activist being charged with some offenses having to do with a protest or demonstration. This has really gotten to people, I think, on a visceral level, where they said, this is wrong, there is no substance to these charges, it could be me. You know, that kind of thing really resonates with people, and I think that's what we're seeing here with the supporters of Santa Cruz 11.
You know, and it's also, I think, linked up with the fact that you see massive overreaction by police and, to some extent, prosecutors in other cities as well. I had thought that Santa Cruz's DA Bob Lee had the distinction of being the leader in charging unfounded felonies, 22 of them for the 11 of us who are being charged. But I just noticed that 31 Philadelphia Occupy activists were acquitted of felony charges 4 or 5 days ago. Something similar, although they didn't occupy a building. I think they occupied an intersection. And other people have, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, and encouraging that some juries are acquitting. Of course, unfortunately, there's also, I think, a case up in Oakland where there's a fellow, I think, was recently convicted, and the police are now using tactics like sending in snatch squads into protests to grab people that, I don't know, they've been given OR conditions that they can't be in a protest, and they're there, so the police use that as a pretext to break up and start beating up people in the protest. And you can see this on video from 2 nights ago in Oakland, or 2 days ago. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Steve.
No, I was just exchanging an observation with Lee, your good friend Lee. The police, once again, added the ticketing of all the bicyclists going the wrong way or doing all these minor offenses downtown. So there you go. Lee is saying these are a report from downtown. He says that they're giving tickets. What was that, Lee?
I knew they were behind me. This is on the radio.
Yeah.
I knew.
Robert North.
Yeah, it's Officer Ayler's.
You want to talk to them? Free radio?
Yeah, just for a minute. Officer Ayler's and his partner have been ticket-plugging people. Robert, you there?
I'm here. Go ahead, Lee.
Okay, what they've been doing, they did a good one yesterday at the drum circle, just to give you an idea. They went up with a bunch of other officers, and they're going up to people and just smiling at them, and they looked at one guy who wasn't even being detained, right? And they said to the guy, I saw this happen, they said to him, do you have any weapons on you? Mind you, the guy wasn't in detention or anything. They just, like, some sort of snide comment or something. And the guy said, yeah, I got a rocket launcher in my pack. And they used it as an excuse to yank him up and slam him up against the car at the drum circle, cuff him and take him away. They gave me a ticket for not making a stop. I mean, we're talking corrupt cops here. They gave me a ticket for not making a stop when I absolutely, on my bicycle at the corner of Church and I think Cedar, and I absolutely stopped. I knew they were behind me. I came to a full stop. They even signaled my turn, and they used it as an excuse to swoop on me and terrorize me for about 10 minutes the other day, and then just a little while ago, and all the critical mass people will like to know this. I just got a ticket for having my bike locked to a meter.
Wow.
Like I said, they're ticket-plugging people.
Do you know the names of any of the officers who gave you these tickets?
Yeah, Ayler, A-H-L-E-R, I believe. And there's a smaller Asian fellow who's working with him, but I don't know his name.
Sounds like a rookie?
Don't know. I've never met him, but, you know, I don't have a whole lot of run-ins with them like that right now, but they seem to be focusing on bicycle riders. A lot of the people they're hitting are homeless people. They walked up to Lev, the mad Russian, shortly after my confrontation over the stop ticket the other day. They walked up to him, and they said in front of a whole bunch of people, Ehlers said this. Weren't you guys, to Lev, weren't you the guy that pulled a knife on me in front of Starbucks the other day? And Lev just looked at him, because he's disabled and mentally handicapped, just looked at him stunned. But if he had said, I've got a rocket launcher in my backpack, I bet he would have found himself slammed up against the car, too. These guys are just thugging people, basically.
What was the reaction of the drum circle crowd to this attack on...
It was removed. It was like 75 yards away. Everybody saw the police activity because they used it as an excuse to drive at high rates of speed up and down the levee while people were standing around and forcing them to move out of the way rapidly and things like that.
Well, I know, Lee, you do a website, Anti-Imperial, is that the right?
Yeah, I'm keeping it a Tumblr lately, but Anti-Imperial would be my handle to look me up by.
And if people want, are you going to be writing about this?
I don't want to give away my alter identity, but it did get written up in the news the other day. There's a morning news report that I'm involved in that goes out every day, and I did give it some international exposure. I have friends in Spain and places like that that are indignados, and they're watching what's happening here really carefully, too.
So not that I want to expose you, but is there a place people can go to read your reports? I guess you can't really tell us that, or we would be
No, I'd rather not say, but it is out there on a well-published website.
Well, if you send me an email, I'll publish
it. You know what I do. Maybe later on you can plug it or something like that.
Yeah, you know, if you want, send me an email that you know, mirrors it.
I'll send you a link, Robert.
Okay.
And you can go look at it.
And also I can put it up anonymously.
Yeah, you can write, it's all Creative Commons.
Okay. Has there been any reaction from homeless folks? Are they, for example, I just heard from Jen Laskin, who's organizing this protest for the Santa Cruz 11 tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the county building, that she's going to welcome a homeless speaker if somebody wants to come and speak. So, for example, Lee, if you want to be one of those speakers, you're welcome to come and be that speaker.
No, actually, tomorrow I have to be in court because a couple of months ago I got a pot ticket down on the levee on Drum Circle Day, and the judge made my date for court April 20th at 1:30 in the afternoon, right? Well, I showed up on that day for a court trial. I did my, my forced arraignment on something that was immediately reduced to an infraction. I got there at 1:30 on 4:20, and guess what? There was no 1:30 session. I apparently had been convicted at 10 a.m., and I went to the court clerk, and they couldn't tell me anything. And I went, anyway, needless to say, I'm going to be in court tomorrow, and I might be in jail for contempt because I have a thing or two to tell the judge about them milking the system so they can just generate revenue by telling the taxpayers.
Well, maybe we should invite people. Are you going to court at 1:30? Would that be the time you...
There won't be a 1:30 court. I'm going to show up and just sit there probably till the end of the 10 a.m. session in Department 2. Anybody wants to say hi, they can come do that.
Huh. So if people want to catch you, you'll be in Department 2 starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow?
All I know is I checked the sheriff's website today, and they finally got around to issuing a warrant. So tomorrow I'm going to do an other business with the judge where I'm already under conviction, showing him a paper that clearly says 1:30 in the afternoon, and I've been falsely convicted.
Well, I know that Judge Gallagher will certainly give you justice. He is notorious for his...
Yeah, I know. He would never falsely convict anybody of anything. Judges don't
certainly
do
not, much less a crime so serious as smoking a doobie on the...
Anyway, so I'm gonna do the morning news report, then show up there at 10 a.m. and try to tell him that the first time bringing me into court over a pot ticket, forced appearance at an arraignment, the first time just to have it reduced to... $100 state mandated infraction was heinous, but this time around it's just corrupt, and I don't want to accept his argument that it was a mistake I'm going to smile at them with absolutely no data whatsoever and say, I think there's probably a pattern of this in your court system, if anybody.
Well, are you on the...
I'm going to see if I get thrown in jail for contempt of court.
Are you
I'm going to be polite, but yeah. I'm going to be very firm with them about
are you
it.
On the, are you on the calendar, Lee, or, you, or would you have to
no,
make I'm these...
No, I won't be on the calendar.
Well, you're going
to
have to
really... I was on
the calendar
on 420, and it didn't happen.
I hear you. Well, they ask old
they
Steve, please.
They absentia, man.
Well, you know, you're kind.
Before I was
kind,
even supposed to be in court.
Well, I wish you luck on that. I know that will be two counts against you, but make sure you wear a business suit. You might be convicted for unlawful dress code violation.
Oh no. Everything's illegal down here nowadays. Yeah. Let me give you back to Steve. Hang on.
All right. Thank you, Lee.
How's that for breaking news? Who says that I have my finger on the pulse of Santa Cruz?
That's what I count on from you, Steve Plaich.
That's what your listeners have come to expect. I'm out of the pizza.
Well, I'm certainly glad you got Lee on there. And what do you think will be the outcome? I mean, will he be able to say anything to Judge Gallagher? Will Judge Gallagher gabble him into silence? I mean, well, he's not on the calendar, so he's going to have trouble even raising his voice, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine exactly how he's going to get himself recognized by the court. So that would be, it is curious.
Huh.
But, you know, Lee moves in curious ways, as you well know.
Maybe if Dr. Steve Plaich is there on his behalf.
Maybe if he were one of my homeless person's legal assistants participants, I might be there. Judge Gallagher would love to see me in court. In fact, reminding you that he qualified me as an expert witness in the Gary Johnson matter of not too long ago.
Indeed, he did. And, of course, then instructed the jury to ignore your testimony.
Hey! So any final thoughts about tomorrow before I ring off?
Well, I was going to ask you, because I know you got your fingers in a number of pies. I always like to kind of follow a few other items, like the DSAL struggle, the struggle to deal with the INS scandal of seizing people in Santa Cruz and WOAC's refusal to back off on that, or he will only take some very mild reforms, the foreclosure problems. Mm-hmm. Anything on any of these three issues?
Well, actually, foreclosure is working on a meeting with John Leopold, supervisor, for next Monday. And, of course, on Tuesday we'll be back to the Board of Supervisors. The ESCOM revisions by the sheriff that he reported out last month, the Board of Supervisors meetings, which we didn't really feel were adequate to really narrow the filter to really arrest serious felons, as was the intent of the program, but we're still working with the sheriff. As you know, we had a meeting with him about foreclosure, and we've also discussed several other issues with him. So those things are all kind of ongoing. The DSAL, we're kind of getting close to our deadline to get our 6,000 signatures that we need to put a charter amendment on the ballot. So we're out here doing that as often and as well as we can to kind of raise awareness for that. And we just had I just came from the Association of Faith Communities meeting where your old friend Don Lane was there, and we're talking about various programs that we're trying to get going. As I was telling you, I was a monitor for the satellite shelter program last night at the Trinity Presbyterian Church. So
you mean the lack of satellite shelter programs? Actually, there was.
Well, now we got three churches and we're looking for seven. So,
but nobody was advised, so they didn't show up. That was the problem.
Well, these things when they started at Calvary about 7 weeks ago, Joe was saying for the first 3 weeks they had nobody, and now they're averaging about 12 to 15 people every night that they have it. So it is something that is starting to become available to homeless folks who understand that there is space available for them somewhere.
Now, is this a first come first serve, or is it only for the most vulnerable in a waiting list situation?
No, it's first come first serve, and there's really no kind of a filtration system that people go through. You know, you show up, you need a bed. We have some, they bought mats, these very expensive sleeping mats that are like they're the Cadillac of sleeping mats, I guess. They're very expensive, but they bought I think a dozen of these that are used for people to sleep on. And Trinity Presbyterian, where I'll be doing this with their pastor, Paul Seaver, for Wednesdays moving forward, he is going to cook them a pancake breakfast in the morning. So everybody's doing kind of what they can. But as you know, there's so many things going on. But, you know, right now, today, tonight, tomorrow, our focus really is on the Santa Cruz 11 and keep the momentum going that we're generating in town, the awareness, you know, the idea about how these prosecutions absolutely must be dismissed and the DA should cease and desist from persecuting and prosecuting any further potential defendants.
And I will be raising that issue. Of course, I've also spoken with Jen Laskin, who's agreed to have a homeless speaker at the rally tomorrow at 2. And I also tried to get some food for the rally, but Joe Schultz was unfortunately unable to do so at such short notice. I did wonder, if people want to get into this ISSP program, where do they go? What do they do? What's the story there, Steve?
Well, I would suggest they show up for the homeless meal on Monday nights at the Calvary Episcopal Church, where you and I are always in attendance. And we can tell them anything they need to know about what the churches are available, what the hours are, when they would have to be there, and we can give them much more information. And this is the kind of program right now that's just better done word of mouth until we build it to where we can actually put up notices around town, or perhaps even notices at Homeless Services Center, saying that here's a circuit of 7 churches, and each night of the week there is a space available for folks who would otherwise maybe be families sleeping in their cars or people sleeping outside. So that's the idea. That's the model that we'd like to achieve. And right now, people come to the Red Church on Monday. They can be part of my Homeless Service Legal Assistance Project there from 5 to 7. They can also hear Robert Norris expounding on who knows what, any number of different issues.
On those occasions when I show up, of course.
Yeah, well, you're showing up with some regularity recently, so maybe you're re-engaging with the community.
Never can tell.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Steve. And, of course, do you want to give out your number in case people want to reach you in the midst of your busy day?
Sure. Anytime, night or day, 466-6078. I'd be happy to talk to them about whatever they need, because I am a man of the people.
You are Steve Plage, Dr.
But anyway,
Steve
looking forward
Plage.
To seeing you tomorrow. Hopefully, Chris will be passing out many, many, many flyers, and we generate some great numbers tomorrow and really get this press conference off and running and make an impression on the district attorney.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
And that was Steve Plage, who can be reached, as he said, at 866-6078. And this, of course, is Free Radio 101.3 FM. Not really broadcasting at the moment, but any one of these Danas now will be back. Apparently there was some problem with the transmitter, and I'm still trying to get an understanding of what's really cooking there. And Uncle Dennis may be in tonight to kind of advise all of us on what the actual skivvy is. In fact, I believe I actually may have an email that may clarify this situation. Let me take a peek here. I'll tell you what, I'm going to read this email, but while I do, let's hear some more from May 1st.
Give yourself a name, too.
Microdot.
And Microdot, you say that you observe some strenuous police exercises?
Yeah, I kind of did.
What did you see?
I walked outside and they had their knees all over this dude's body and pushing him and stuff. And
where was this?
Right in front of Benicio's parking lot by the crosswalk.
How long ago?
Maybe 5 days ago.
And what were the circumstances? Day or night?
Nighttime.
And was this a madcap murderer who had just been stopped in his tracks?
No, from what I could tell, he was just a dude getting his face pushed into the ground and put on exhibit for everybody else while the police walked around and asked everybody questions.
Did they
He's
seem,
on the ground.
What kind of crime are they investigating, dude?
I think that they were investigating just who's present. I think that any lead they have or any chance they have to get in public and see what's going on, that they'll take it.
But what specific crime do you think they were? Why was the guy on the ground, for instance?
Possibly a public intoxication, from what I was seeing.
Did you observe any ultimate outcome to this? Did you see what happened next?
No, I just left.
You came and you went.
Yeah.
And we've been talking with Microdot, perhaps.
Yeah, or some other code name.
Equally fictitious name. Very suspicious, Mr. Dot.
Is it Mr. Dot?
Yes. Thank you.
So it is May 1st, 2012. I'm going through the Co-America. It's a bank that is on the corner. It's the Co-America Bank drive-up, actually. And it's around 5 o'clock, headed for the post office, where there's going to be a rally for, well, it's a May 1st rally, which has to do with Labor Day, Women's Day. Occupies across the country and in Santa Cruz are involved in this attempt to restore the public commons to the community and the economy to the citizenry. We hear the street performer blowing on a bass sax as I approach. Yeah, looks like there's a tent up there, right at Jamba Juice. Amen.
Amen.
Nice looking. Hey, good to see you. So what kind of a sax? That's a bass sax?
It's a tenor.
It's tenor. A tenor sax.
Tenor, yeah.
And what's your name, performer?
Lucky.
And Lucky, are you a man often down here of doing some tooting?
Toot, yeah, toot every day, just about.
Any hassles from police for tooting?
No, no.
Excellent.
Just keep it, you know, within range of, you know, there's obnoxiousness as well as...
Well, you sounded pretty good to me. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you a lot. Huh?
For the moment.
Bathrobes forever.
Here, here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm in a bathrobe, in case you wonder what that comment was about. It's a huge, looks like, is it a duck? Is it a swan? Is it a... It's a beak of some kind of a bird. It's one of those large mega puppets. And there are numerous people here, including Yao. So, what's happening here? Have you been following this group of motley crowd here?
No, not since 4:30. Just, you know, recently.
And it looks like a crowd of, what, about 100, maybe?
Yeah, actually, I just guessed about 80 a couple minutes ago when I was talking to somebody.
And when did you first join this group?
4:30 at Laurel and Pacific.
And was there a mass rebellion? People have stopped working. They all lay down on the streets and began to copulate.
Actually, I heard that the students were unable to make it to our rendezvous point, so we had to come up here to meet them. So we came up here.
Well, here you are. And we've been talking...
And now we're working on the copulation. Bishop.
We got cops. We are going to have copulation.
Yeah, there's definitely cops around.
But the wrong kind of copulation.
Unfortunately.
We've been talking with...
Bishop. Thank you, Bishop. Always a pleasure.
As I should have known, of course. I see a lot of... there's petitioners. There's Jamba Juice observers sipping their Jamba Juice. There's Brian Murtha with his Bob Dylan birthday special T-shirt giving out flyers. What is that flyer, Brian? It's a brief history of May Day.
Take a flyer.
I have a flyer. You gave me a flyer. In fact, I saw this online. I like this flyer. I want a chant. That's Abby doing chanting, and there's a "Your right to amend the Constitution will soon be gone," says the signer, one person. And he's passing on information. And there's the infamous woman with two dogs who was summarily thrown out of court. Your name is
Susan Worth.
Susan, have you been to court again?
No.
Well, is that because you've been deterred or just nothing interesting?
Yeah, well, I actually missed Gary's last court date, but...
Well, luckily he's not got another court date at the moment.
Yeah.
That's Gary Johnson, or Ground Zero Gary, the 2 years for sleeping. This is Alfredo, the police dog. Thank you. I mean, the priest bear. So you've been walking with this march, or you just showed up?
Yeah, you know, I walked with the tail end of the march. I wasn't sure where they began. I thought we were supposed to meet up with the students. I thought they were supposed to come down, and I was waiting for them for a while over there. So.
Apparently it's a little slower.
A little confused.
A little confused, but you still have your stop funding war button on there.
Yes, I still do.
And you're still going to give me a hug, of course.
Oh.
And here we have a man with a sign, 4 million more foreclosures, estimated in the next 2 years. Where do you get that figure from, sir?
I just picked it up from the post office over there, but I know that more foreclosures are likely because banks seem like they're not showing any mercy to homeowners, not even letting them refinance, even when they're able to. And so so. That's why I'm out here, and I think that's why a lot of people are out here. I can't speak for everyone.
Do you have any friends whose homes have been foreclosed on, who have lost jobs around this?
Well, I don't know about friends, but I know little kids whose their families have been foreclosed on in Southern California, and they're getting moved out, and they don't even know what's happening, and it doesn't seem right when families can be moved out. You know, they weren't speculators or anything like that. Their family's just living in their house. And
frequent protester.
I do like to show up when I can, especially at Occupy and also anti-war movements. And so that's why I'm out here today. It looks like a lot of people are out here today.
And your name is?
I'm Teddy Woods.
Thank you, Teddy. Anything else you want to add?
Okay. Thanks, man.
Here we have a man with a bike. What do you think of all this, sir?
I think it's okay. I wish it was bigger. But I think a lot of people went to San Francisco and Oakland. So I'm proud that, you know, I'm sure that the people who would have been here are probably somewhere else protesting.
Well, I do see a few of the Santa Cruz 11 here. There's Angel over there, and I look in a mirror, I see me, and so forth. I know that I did get a call from Maria, an Occupy Santa Cruz activist, who said the building has been taken over up in San Francisco, and this time with the permission of the Episcopal Church. So,
really?
That's what she said.
I would love to hear more about that. That's amazing. If that's true, I'm going to go up there and see it.
Well, I want a full report from you, and we've been talking with...
Anonymous.
Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous.
Thank you.
And keep a low profile.
Yep.
All right. So we're talking with
Ananda.
And Ananda, what are you doing? You're wandering around here. You got a notebook in hand. Any comments?
Yeah, I love being here because this is a slice of humanity, and we're all standing up for what's right.
At least for an hour and a half before we go home, right?
Well, we're all standing up.
Some of us are kneeling, some of us are lying down. Maybe a sleep-in would be a good idea. Wait, that's illegal in Santa Cruz.
Can't sleep.
Can't sleep in Santa Cruz.
So, I'm proud of everybody being here. I've been watching the news all day long from around the world. And people from around the whole world are standing up for workers' rights, their rights. You know, it's just time. So I'm really proud of everybody for coming out and taking a stand.
Here, here. And they're there. Talking with
Ananda.
Ananda, as you said before. All right, what's going on here?
He takes these French with his bathrobe.
Mademoiselle, je ne parle pas le français. Qu'est-ce que. Comment allez-vous?
Bonjour, ma sœur. No, your sœur is sister.
Yeah, and you're sœur. What is your name, madam? Are you from France?
Oui, oui, oui.
No, we don't do that here. There are no bathrooms for your kind.
Oui, oui.
No, sorry. So I think...
Here? Oui, oui.
You have a dissent is patriotic button. You have a number of other buttons on your... are these buttons simply the accoutrements of a daily event? Or I should say, an event on one day, and then you're going to hustle on home and put them back on the wall?
Oh, you've got more buttons on than I do. I feel really naked.
Don't change the subject, madam. You're the one who brought up the wee wee stuff. So I hear you have an associate. I see you have an associate here that says kindness. Yes.
Do
you like that button?
Where'd you get that one?
I don't know. So, madam, what is this kindness banner?
Hi, Robert. This is made by the Occupy group to commemorate the general strike on the International May Day. What is May Day? Well, it's a single day celebrating the tradition of fervent struggle that was an eight-hour workday. One is an eight-hour workday. And because we have these, we have all the symbols of major religions in the world in this behind us here. And so the kind
of... that has been set up.
That corresponds to that.
It is a canopy. I see that.
Further instruction, you can go talk to the artist yourself.
Is there a permit for this event? That's what I want to know.
I
see. We'll have to research this more deeply. We've been talking with...
Coral Reef.
Thank you, Coral.
101.13.
And you are a Tuesday programmer?
Yeah.
6 to 9?
Yeah.
And 8 is fine?
Say what?
Yes. Talk to you later, alligator.
After a while.
Don't forget to smile. So there's a call for people to march. To march to Mission to meet with the UCC.
There's also Channel 8 News here, and I'm following this questionable woman with her human need, not corporate greed, in, and a rather attractive and provocative T-shirt. If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. Does this mean you want a hug? Is that what this means? He smiles and looks the other way. I have to assume no. That's a negative on that one. So, anything about the march, madam, that you want to comment on?
Yes, I hope we take the streets and not end up on the sidewalk.
Hey,
it looks like they're on the sidewalk.
It looks like there are. We have police officers here to make sure that you don't do any jaywalking.
Don't give them hard time.
I would never do that. Yes. Me and the... Oh, come on. The police are our friends. That's why we're all on the sidewalk, because we trust them. See, there's another officer there. Double parked in the bike lane. Now, officers. So... have a woman in Robin Hood dress that's part of the Occupy apparel. We are the 99%, says your button. Are you, you're not one of the wealthier?
We are California.
Oh, really? Did you come down for this event?
I certainly did. I was here the night you started, and I'm glad to see a lot of people still here. It's fabulous. Familiar faces to me.
Indeed. Kind of a fraction of those who are dutifully obeying the law as they walk across the crosswalk. It's not really. It's kind of depressing to me to see it. But there is a flag or two. If you stay at home, ignore your rights, they won't arrest you. You can... It's not the best thing to do. So, you came all the way in from Sonoma today to...
Sonora.
Sonora?
It's an easy mistake to make.
Where is Sonora?
It's up in the Motherlode.
Ah, in the gold country.
On Highway 108 and 49.
And so, why aren't you doing your occupying up there?
We do it every Saturday from 10 to 1 in Courthouse Park, every single Saturday since October.
And how is that going? Numbers
quite
growing? Are you, have you thrown out the rascals in your town?
We get a lot of thumbs up, a few fingers, and yeah, we do all right. We haven't had any trouble yet so far. Except someone told us to replace the grass in the park one day, but...
I see.
You know how it is.
Mow your lawn and make sure you don't have any old cars on blocks.
Yeah, you know how it is. But anyway, yeah, we're doing okay up there. We're happy.
Well, we've been talking with...
I'm Terry Gerhart.
Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome.
And crossing Mission Street now, quite legally within the confines of the crosswalk, with the signal on my team. Various individuals are sort of almost in small groups of 1, 2, 3, and 4. Small groups are walking up to the Mission Street Plaza to unite with the students. Seems like this is, I guess only a few of us are coming to do this, but I'm one of them, so we'll just see what happens.
Pretty damn hard, I'll tell you that.
Here you are, Big Drum Brent, all dressed up in your drummer's outfit with your huge 50-gallon plastic white...
This one had olive oil in it.
I see, a former olive oil container. And we're trooping up the hill here, up Mission Street Hill. I remember the halcyon days when there were 6,000 of us trooping up this hill.
You see halcyon a lot these days.
Yeah.
Halcyon days.
Yay! Yes.
Tomorrow is halcyon day, so remember that.
I'll try to keep that in mind. I was thinking of yesterday, actually, many yesterdays ago.
Yes.
So we'll see. Yeah, there were 6,000 people. On 2000, it was in March, February or March of 2003, and the anti-war protest came up the street.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. I believe it was on Valentine's Day, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, could have been.
But now, of course, we have a few dozen people. Oh, well.
Right.
And rise up, says the...
Robert, looking like a damn druid or something.
I'm just tired and want to go to bed, but it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz. So what does this sign mean, unite? For those who are not present and don't understand these things.
Unite means to gather together.
Yeah.
And rise up means to make yourself more visible and more involved.
That's all. Like this police officer on his motorcycle is uniting with his force of other police officers. Probably not the same thing.
He was just one, so he's not united.
That's true. He's probably part of a central command, though.
Should notify radio.
Would you like to give your name for our police records? Very well.
I don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
So.
You don't know me. Very well. See you later. So there we are, another man with a sign on the street at Silver and Mission. As I pass the Mission Street Park. We have the latest update here at 520 is...
This is Al Lundell, a.k.a. Dr. Future, and on KSCO.
Of course. our famous liberal local station.
Yeah, right. What's left?
Don't say the words Free Radio Santa Cruz or they'll arrest you.
Yes, right. All right. Well, anyway, the latest word is I just talked to Captain Scotty Miller, who runs the Magic Love Bus. It's the who's just started the new trek across the country, the Keezy retrospective 50 years later. And Santa Cruz is one of the first stops, and he's here for this event.
To get busted, perhaps.
Well, they have a drone. They have a special drone aircraft. They thought we'd use it instead of the other side.
Oh, I see. So drones for the people.
Yes. Yeah, drones for the people.
We're droning on.
Why should the cops have all the fun?
Yes. And all the technology.
And all the technology. Exactly. So they'll be down here shortly to the clock tower. That's the latest word. And they're heading in this direction.
There's a vacant bank across the street from the clock tower.
You think?
I told that. I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes.
You notice any protection around it by any chance?
I don't know. Bank is probably well guarded. There's spider webs here and there. You know.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's fair game.
As an indicted felon of the Santa Cruz 11, I cannot comment on that as a...
I would like beg to interrupt myself, an indicted but not convicted felon. And it is true that there are at least three vacant banks around, or former banks. I guess they're still banks. They say they have kind of bankish looks to the outside. They haven't been converted into condos or, I don't know, 7-Elevens or anything else. So that we have a number of eyesores around Santa Cruz that are perhaps being used by squatters even as I speak, none of whom, however, are being accused of felonious occupation, as some of us are. Again, to remind you, you are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. The call-in number, 427-3772. 427-3772. Tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the courthouse, right across the river at Ocean and Water Streets, there's going to be a press conference and a celebration and march urging the district attorney to spend public funds more wisely by dropping charges against innocent activists who are reported on, who were present at, or and might have even been supportive of the idea that empty buildings are the crime, but are not guilty of trespass or felony vandalism or anything of that sort. And not any more guilty, let's put it this way, than 300 other people who went in and out of the building, including a city council member, other reporters, and so forth, who are being selectively ignored as the police and DA zero in on yours truly and other reporters that I think they probably don't like very much. Come on down, 2 o'clock, check it out. There's a march at 2:30. There may even be a piñata busting. The Wells Fargo piñata may be busted open, and the bank may be opened up for all to explore. That is to say, the mini bank and the piñata, in more of a symbolic exercise.
A matter of strategy for you, but I would only
not for you anyway.
Well, you know, it would be perhaps. Do I want to go into a spiderweb-ridden bank in order to get a conviction?
For what? What would it accomplish?
Vacant space in these banks that is not being used. That's the reason the original banks, as I understand it, though I was not a part of the original occupation team, as I understand there was originally some occupation people.
Really?
Well, there were, somebody took over the bank. So,
yeah.
And then when those of us who walked down there saw it was open, it was open.
Yeah.
But, a lot of people didn't know what was going on and only learned later. some of us to our chagrin.
Yes, indeed.
But actually, the idea of vacant buildings are the crime, empty buildings are the crime, is a perfectly reasonable position and one that's historic.
Well, yeah, it's something that the Euros have dealt with for years. They used to, I remember in Amsterdam, there were squatters kind of quite a regular basis for empty buildings.
Scofflaw, as you said.
Yes, as I said, yeah. And it seemed to kind of work for the Euro. It's the question whether or not Americans can handle that kind of activity, you know, whether or not our society is loose enough to be able to deal with that.
We have a police force that will make sure that kind of nonsense does not occur.
It doesn't happen, yeah.
Or if it does happen, we'll punish some people later and scare the rest of them.
Right, yeah, no doubt. We have a slightly different jigsaw puzzle to figure out.
Different ethic here.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, that's the golden rule. Those who have the gold make the rule.
Yeah. So you've will you been find any surprises here today?
I just got here. I'm kind of it's a nice weather for a walk, march, a linger. A lot of nice signs, some enthusiasm.
Hallelujah blessing.
Hey, hallelujah.
Hey, how you doing?
I see you have a drum with you.
Occupy. We're the 99%. I'm the tail drummer.
Indeed.
Whitetail.
Tail drummer Hal, so to speak.
There's tail gunner, short tail drummer. I'm the tail drummer.
I've heard of tail gunner Joe, now we got tail drummer Hal.
Yeah, I'm watching, what comes up from behind, so.
From behind. Soon he'll be the head gunner.
Head drummer. Sorry, I'll be the head drummer.
Are there actually people up there at the stoplight? We're near the Mission and Highway 1 stoplight. Is that actually a focal point, or are people sort of wandering around?
There's nobody in charge here, so it's really hard to tell. So what everyone's doing is running by their own information and then sharing that. And so they're separating real information from erroneous information in real time here. So.
Indeed. This is sort of a research project.
It's kind of interesting for anybody who's studying group behavior.
Indeed.
I think.
I see sort of a sociologist yourself, I can hear.
Well,
I hear kind of a bend to the.
No, I like the topic, I must admit.
Then they figure if enough people are doing it, they must know what they're doing, so they all follow.
This could be a new strategy for the police department, or to, should we say, lead the police department to a happier conclusion, where they don't harass the protesters.
Oh. Well, if you have the right frequency, you can do anything.
Indeed. Frequently, I hope.
Yes. So far, the police are being very nice. So far.
Well, since you have people who are walking in the crosswalks and saying, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, I don't... why not? As long as they don't challenge the might of Wells Fargo. There you have it. And again, we've been talking with the man about the drum...
Hallelujah blessing.
And his associate...
Al Lundell.
Thank you both. And you're a KSCO broadcaster?
Yeah. I'm a KSCO. I'm on the What's Left section in the afternoon. I am the Dr. Future. I play a futurist by the name of Dr. Future, where I look at the future of sex, politics, religion, arts, and science.
Do you fuck in the studio?
Yeah. We haven't gone that far yet.
Well, it could be, pleasant, enjoyable.
Can't say that word.
Enlightening. you mean murder, killing, President Obama? No, fuck
don't
is what you're saying.
Word.
Yeah, the F word. Yeah, so.
He doesn't. He's on free. He's on the pilot radio station, so they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Exactly.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
Yeah. Fuck yes, as we say. And, we can just F it up all day. As long as you don't sleep in the studio, that's a no-no. We don't want to get carried away and be too anti-bourgeois. So, thank you very much, guys. And I guess I see people kind of coming back one by one.
Head back this way. You'll start running into the front end as you head that direction. So you'll get a lot of students, I think, for your interviews.
And the students are coming down with the magic bus right here.
And some are coming in the magic bus.
Magic bus for the magic bus?
You could say that.
Hopefully not.
It's not called the magic bus for nothing.
Thank you, guys, and we'll just leave it at that, lest we go on far too long, as we already have.
So you
tell me your show is apolitical. You seem to have some political savvy. Again, we're talking with Al Lundell.
And we'll leave Al for the moment. I'm going to do a brief, occasionally I find some interesting interviews on antiwar.org, and this one looked interesting to me. Let's see how interesting it is. It may actually... be worth hearing. We'll see how this goes. This has to do with the struggle of Bradley Manning, who, as you may know, is the whistleblower who has been held for over a year now by the Army
for, I guess they're trying to, I'm not quite calling it treason, or are they calling it treason? Let's hear what the story is here.
Introducing Michael Ratner, president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you, Scott.
Well, good. I'm very happy to have you here. A very important piece that you wrote in The Guardian, Bradley Manning, a show trial of state secrecy. I guess, first of all, let's talk about the show trial part. Is it the secrecy that makes it a show trial, or are there other aspects you're referring to there in the title?
Well, the central aspect, I think, of Bradley Manning's trial is they have the wrong person on trial. Even assuming Bradley Manning did what they allege he did, which was to take documents in some way and upload them or somehow get them out to the world through WikiLeaks and other places, what those documents illustrate is massive crimes by the United States. I mean, tens of thousands of more civilians killed in Iraq, video in which a helicopter, it's called collateral murder video, in which U.S. soldiers are shown, really, in my view, attacking both the Reuters journalists and particularly kids afterwards. That's unacceptable. It shows a variety of massive war crimes by the United States and massive illicit deals by the United States. And so the people who should be on trial are not the people who expose those crimes, as I think there's an obligation to expose criminality when you see it, but it should be the people who committed those crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that's a show trial about it is here they're putting up the person who's trying to expose criminality. That's the first thing. The second thing is, look, this is a court-martial. So it already has less of the attributes of a justice system that we have in our federal courts. Not that that's perfect, but it has even less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put on top of it some reason, and the main thrust of the article I wrote, they are trying Bradley Manning roughly in secret. Two things happen when you go to that trial, and I've attended it. One is none of the court orders that the judge issues, none of the motions or papers filed by the federal government, the prosecutor, and finally, because of a good defense counsel, some of those are coming out. But none of the prosecution materials and none of the court orders. So I sit in court, I'm a lawyer, and I can't understand the proceedings because I can't read any of the papers in advance.
And so if this was a regular federal court, you would be able to keep up with all of that stuff?
Oh, every single document, unless it's classified, would be given to us. And we could get it from a filing. We could get the docket sheet and everything.
Well, now, is that just because it's a military court-martial, or they've really changed the rules for this particular case?
You know, I think it's both. I think they're being tougher because it's this case. I think in a normal case, first of all, they don't get many requests in a normal case. Hardly any press goes to a normal court-martial. But this is the biggest court-martial they've probably had in 100 years in the United States. And to not give the media and the public access to the documents on which they plan to convict Bradley Manning is incredible. And it's not that they're classified. The claim is not that they're classified. The claim is that simply there's no right to get them, which is dead wrong. We have I have cases that I can make a list as long as my arm where it's required that the media and the public is really the same as the media, has the same rights, to get access to the court orders. How can a judge issue a court order on pretrial publicity and then none of us can see it? I mean, it's absurd. And this is a case. What you have to understand, the implications, Scott, here, are here's a man who allegedly gave up secrets or, you know, classified material or information about what the government was doing. And he did it in part because what our government has been doing is hiding its own misconduct in various wars throughout the world. And at the same, so he's doing that, and they're actually demonstrating, the government by its position here, and the judge is demonstrating that his position is absolutely justified because the U.S. hides everything. So here you have a guy saying, I had to give this up because it's hidden, and now they're just continuing to hide stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Manning's not getting a fair trial. The public isn't getting a real sense of what's going on at the trial. The media isn't able to report on it. It's in some courtroom at Fort Meade that's very hard to get through to begin with. But the secrecy part is really appalling. I've never been to a trial at all like this in my life.
Wow. That's quite a statement. I'm sure you've been to a lot of trials. Again, it's Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights. And now, all of this is because basically they're trying to flip him, right? They're trying to get him to make a deal and testify against Julian Assange that Assange put him up to it. That way Assange is not a journalist protected by the First Amendment. Assange is a co-conspirator in a foreign plot to steal information, which would make Manning not a whistleblower anymore, right? But the dupe of this terrible James Bond villain, Assange. But that would be okay, because then they give him a lesser sentence. That's basically what they're pushing for, and that's why they're treating him this way. Is that correct?
Well, I think two things, really, Scott. I think one is, if you talk to military people or, even people who are somewhat sympathetic, are upset that he, quote, broke his military oath and did what he did, speaking of Bradley Manning. But I agree with you. I think the driving force, not that I agree with you, is that even David Coombs, his lawyer, that's the main position of the lawyer here, and he said it in what's called the Article 32 proceeding, which is the pretrial. He went into court and he said, look, they've even charged this guy with this aiding the enemy charge, which is ridiculous. There's no way, what Bradley Manning was trying to do.
Talk about children and youth now.
Was really expose what he had seen on this computer and said, how can we be doing this kind of thing? But when Coombs gets into court, Bradley Manning's defense counsel, what he says is they've charged him with something that has a potential death penalty. They've said they're only going to try for life imprisonment, and they're not willing to make any kind of a deal with him. And what they're trying to do, and he said it in court, they're trying to bludgeon Bradley Manning, assuming he knows anything about relationship to WikiLeaks or Julian Assange. They're trying to bludgeon him into getting Julian Assange. That's the big fish here. And of course, if they can do that, they would probably then begin to negotiate with Bradley Manning on a sentence, assuming Bradley Manning knows anything. We don't know that. But I think your characterization is right. That is what the defense lawyer is trying to say, is saying that all of this stuff, and you look at the treatment, he had 9 months of torture where he was stripped naked, stuck into an underground cell, never seen the light of day, 23 hours of solitary a day. And that, of course, was another attempt to bludgeon Bradley Manning. It's terrible. I mean, his conditions are better now, but that they took this young man, 22 years old, who apparently had some conscience that a lot of other people don't have, who took a risk, allegedly, and they're trying to get him, use him as a really essentially a pawn in their greater efforts to get Julian Assange.
Well, and also back to your original point about what's the show trial about. It's a show for other potential whistleblowers that you better not, because boy, will we ruin this one life you've got. But I wonder, when it comes to piling on these charges like aiding the enemy, does that ever work? Or traditionally, I guess, it must have worked sometimes here or there, but do they ever really get away with blaming a whistleblower for a terrible truth getting into the hands of the enemy, even if it benefits the enemy? If it was really for, whistleblower purposes, then it's whistleblower purposes, right? Can they really charge you with treason for that?
Yeah, well, you're making an interesting point, and it's an important one. I mean, the government or the prosecutor's argument here is that, that Al-Qaeda, who is the, quote, enemy here, reads WikiLeaks. Bradley Manning knew they read WikiLeaks, or certainly would have thought they read WikiLeaks, and therefore he somehow is aiding Al-Qaeda because this material is, quote, going to help Al-Qaeda, although we don't know exactly how. Now, why is that different than the New York Times aiding the enemy? When the New York Times reveals the fact that Bush, which they did, was warrantlessly wiretapping, anybody, all kinds of people in the United States in contact with people all over the world, yes, Al-Qaeda is going to read the New York Times. Of course they are. So why isn't the U.S., why isn't the New York Times guilty of aiding the enemy? Why isn't the soldier who said to Rumsfeld, we're not getting enough armor for our vehicles, and that's speech, that talk is read by Al-Qaeda, why isn't that soldier, why isn't Rumsfeld accused of aiding the enemy? So it's an absurd, a completely absurd claim. The only way you could say that is if Bradley Manning, which is completely crazy, specifically intended to want to aid Al-Qaeda. Now, we know that's not true. There's not a shred of evidence to support that. The evidence is, if you read any of the chat logs or any of that, it's completely the other way. He was upset by what he saw in these videos. He wanted to expose it to the American public. He was a whistleblower. So this is really a pile-on charge in the context of what you said earlier, Scott, a pile-on charge in which they're trying to get him to bend and plead guilty to something and hopefully in their view, have information that can somehow get WikiLeaks and Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, real quick, I know you got to go, but Richard Nixon, he wasn't in any, you know, direct chain of command having anything to do with the prosecution of Charles Manson. But he kind of had accidentally pronounced Manson guilty and then said, whoa, sorry, I take that back, and I never should have said that. And he tried to be real careful after that because he didn't want for Manson to actually get off because the president had pronounced him guilty before, you know, and made it impossible for him to get a fair trial. In this case, Obama and Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, have both pronounced him guilty publicly, and they are both directly in the chain of command, the two highest men in the chain of command, over the judge and the entire jury and everybody running the entire court.
I think you made
how can they get away with that?
Two really strong points. One is, when Nixon did it, Nixon was not directly in the chain of command that appoints the federal judges for the particular trial, that appoints the jury, and that the highest appeal is due to. Nixon, you know, our judges are federal, they're for life.
Well, that was even a state court, right? The Manson trial?
Manson was a state court, so he has not even nothing to do with it. So Nixon's statement just pales in comparison to what Panetta and Obama did, because they actually have ultimate control over the military, quote, justice system in this country. So they are really command influence, and that's what it's called. That's what the lawyer David Coombs argued on for Bradley Manning, but of course has been unsuccessful so far, but it's clearly an issue of serious command influence. And what's also interesting in your example is Nixon, even though he wasn't in the chain of command for a state court, he actually took back the statement because he was very nervous about making it even when he wasn't in control of the system. You don't hear either Leon Panetta or Barack Obama saying, I take it back, we have to judge him first. So it's really an off-the-wall statement.
Well, and now, but I guess because it's such a high-profile thing, it's not like his lawyers can walk in there and say, Your Honor, you have to dismiss this charge because the President and the Secretary of Defense have already botched it. And if they don't like it, tough. It's their fault for blabbing their mouth because the politics of the situation require that this process continue no matter what.
No, that's right. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, right now, you know, they're on a certain road, and they've dug themselves, the State Department and others have dug themselves pretty deeply because their first reactions were so outrageous to this, which is normal. You know, unfortunately, it's normal when you expose, when truth tellers expose secrets that are secrets of crimes in particular. It has consequences, unfortunately, and they're heroes. Those people who do that are heroes. Let's be straight about it. But unfortunately, they will suffer the burden of the state coming down on them for a period of time. Eventually, whether it's the Daniel Ellsbergs of the world or the others, they will be recognized for the heroes they are. But there's a period, and we're in it now, when, you know, a truth teller, a whistleblower, really suffers. I mean, one problem for me here has been that, you know, the media is not covering Bradley Manning in the way they used to. One is, of course, you are, but one reason I think is the secrecy of the trial, and I can't get much. But for some reason, he's faded off, and he needs support. I mean, we need to be out there politically.
Well, I'll tell you what it was. It was the 2 minutes hate couldn't last more than 2 minutes. By the third minute, people started saying, well, wait a minute, he seems like a decent kid. You know?
That
was why they dropped it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, because when you go to court and you realize who he is, I mean, this is not some incarnate evil, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they started out going, blood on his hands, in a way to just get everybody chanting. And that will work for a little while, as we saw. But apparently, you know, that I think that's why they dropped it.
No, and I think what people have an obligation to do is people should, there's evaluations of what was released, and it's extraordinary. I mean, there's, you know, people from various, you know, more progressive periodicals that talked about what was released in the Cablegate, talked about what was released in the, you know, Afghanistan papers and the Iraq papers, and it's amazing stuff, and it's remarkable, and that's what the press ought to be focused on, what this guy was able to say about America.
Right. I mean, the list is almost endless. The most important probably is the story that where it was verified about the Americans that murdered the family and then called in an airstrike to cover up the evidence in Iraq, and that story came out in the last batch of the WikiLeaks just in time to completely scotch Obama's attempt to try to get immunity for our soldiers to stay in Iraq beyond 2011.
very crucial.
And forced a real end to that war that Obama was trying to back out of his promise on.
And then you look at the consequences for American soldiers who kill lots of people, like the Haditha massacre, and they get a slap on the wrist, essentially, and now they're trying to put Bradley Manning away for life.
Right, I forgot if it was Glenn Greenwald or who it was that wrote about how Bales, the accused in the Afghan Kandahar massacre there, is actually being held at Fort Leavenworth, maybe, you know, just on the other side of the wall from Bradley Manning right now, and is probably being treated better.
No, I think that's probably right. I'm sure that's the case.
Maybe.
I'm sure that's the case.
All right, I'm sorry. Listen, I've kept you way over time.
It's great to have you. Great to talk to you, Scott.
I appreciate your time on the show very much.
And I just want to encourage your listeners to go to the Bradley Manning Support Network. Support Bradley. He wants letters right now. I don't have the address here, but it'll be on the Bradley Manning Support Network, and people should do that.
Yep, bradleymanning.org there. Yep.
Right. Thanks.
All right, thanks very much for your time, Michael. Appreciate it. Michael Ratner, everybody, president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Bradley Manning, a show trial of state secrecy, is the piece at The Guardian.
And that was from antiwar.org, that has regular interviews every day and a lot of interesting stories. They don't have much about the Occupy movement, and they're a libertarian website that's a little nervous about lefty stuff, but they do stand pretty strongly and militantly against foreign wars, and you can find a lot of interesting articles there at antiwar.org or antiwar.com. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. We are streaming. I'd get the word from that on caretaker Coral Brun, who called in earlier, and she has her own show 6 to 9 with Free the Land on Tuesday. They often do a lot of stuff that I would find interesting if I bothered to listen in, and I should. And their shows, I think, are archived as well. For those who are interested, there's a variety of shows. I guess Nessie has a show on Saturday night, 6 to 9. That's the musician I told you who got the grim treatment from Commissioner Baskett in court for amplified sound, for simply having a small bumpity-bumpity-bumpity-bump kind of very low amplified device in the background, and was given a $550 ticket by Officer Warren without a warning. And then Warren apparently misspoke or lied about it in court, claiming he repeatedly had encounters with Nessie before. Not much time left here. A couple of quick note, so I think probably this is too late for folks. There's a movie tonight in Watsonville, When a Woman Steps Forward, a documentary screening and hip-hop concert about Mare, a female hip-hop artist from Oaxaca, Mexico. Mare is medicine for the devaluating experiences of many young women of color today. As a young native Zapotec female born in Oaxaca City, her unique life experience is rarely heard perspective on life and community liberation. And unfortunately, I'm announcing this a bit late. It starts at 8 over at the Bike Shack at 555 Main Street in Watsonville. That's another Brown Berets production. Hats off to the Brown Berets for their support tomorrow. And they're organizing a press conference in support of the Santa Cruz 11. Thank you very much, Brown Berets. And thank you for these other community events in English and Spanish, in Inglés y Español. Para los dos, que ellos que hablan español, ellos que hablan inglés, those who speak English and those who speak Spanish. Tomorrow night, there's another item coming up. I got the word from Grant Wilson, one of the Santa Cruz 11, or perhaps not. He did have charges dismissed. Will they be refiled as the DA is threatened to do? We'll see. But he tells us that there's a showing by the Santa Cruz Guerrilla Drive-In tomorrow night with the Real Work Film Festival of Matuan. That's a John Salen film that I've never seen. It takes more than guns to kill a man. This is a award-winning portrayal of a significant incident in the history of union organizing in the U.S. coal industry. The 1920 to 21 Coal Wars was a dramatic conflict that occurred in a small mining town on the hills of West Virginia and ignited a power keg of racial hostility, corruption, and betrayal. That's 8:15. Well, there'll be some coal shorts, and then at 8:45 at the Green Station. I'm not quite sure where that is. It's 433 Ocean Street. Maybe that's the new... Well, it's the corner of Ocean Street and Soquel Avenue. Oh, that's, of course, the green... That's the gas station that provides, I guess, diesel fuel or fuel of the kind of fuel I never use in my sticker mobile. But that's going to be tomorrow, 8:15, and then the feature at 8:45 there. And I believe it's free. It's Guerrilla Theater, plus short films about issues with modern coal mining and intermission. Great company and a guaranteed good time. Bring blankets, pillows, anything you need to be comfortable in the great outdoors. Friends, snacks to share, donations to support the project. The Guerrilla Drive-In is an outdoor movie theater. Hasn't been outdoors much recently. They kind of been scared away by the Polizei. But I'm glad to see them back and out and about. Apparently under the cover of the Real Work Film Festival, the May Day Labor Film Festival, that's having its 10th anniversary from April 12th to May 11th, and good for them. So that's happening. I think we had an aborted Wall Street film last night at the Occupy. I think the power was not sufficient for the DVD player guy, and thanks anyway, Chris, for trying on that one. What else have I got here? Going to be playing some more of the May 1st interviews on Sunday. Not that there's anything really earth-shaking there, but some of it's interesting. Interesting article by Dave Lindorf, Real Politics Must Be in the Streets, The Constitutional Crimes of Barack Obama. This is in Counterpunch. I'm going to read a little bit of it. As we slog towards another vapid, largely meaningless exercise in pretend democracy with the selection of a new president and Congress this November, it is time to make it clear that the current president, I call him the Führer, elected 4 years ago by so many people with such inflated expectations, myself included, as I had hoped vainly it turned out, that's Lindorf, not me, I wasn't hopeful in any way about Obama. That those who elected him would press him to act in a progressive way is not only a betrayer of those hopes, but is a serial violator of his oath of office. He is, in truth, a war criminal, easily the equal of his predecessor George W. Bush, and perhaps even of Bush's regent, former Vice President Dick Cheney. Let me count the ways. For starters, in vowing to preserve, protect, and defend the U.S. Constitution, President Obama, upon taking office, had a sacred obligation to prosecute the people who had gravely wounded that document prior to his assuming office. It was clear, as Dave Lindorf wrote in his book, The Case for Impeachment, the legal argument for removing President Bush from office, that Bush and Cheney had ordered and condoned and covered up torture of captives in their so-called war on terror, as well as the very real wars against Iraq and Afghanistan, committing grievous war crimes that are not only violations of international law, but of the U.S. criminal code, given that the U.S. is a leading author and signatory of the Geneva Accords. They also were war criminals of the first degree for orchestrating, through lies to both the U.N. Security Council and the U.S. Congress and the American people, about the alleged threat and imminence of any threat by Iraq to the U.S. or its allies. President Obama, under the U.N. Charter and under U.S. law, as the president, commander-in-chief, and top law officer in the nation, was bound to investigate and prosecute those crimes. Instead, he ordered that there would be no prosecutions. Another way... A federal court also ruled that President Bush had committed a felony in using the National Security Agency and several complicit telecommunications companies to spy on massive numbers of Americans with no warrants. Again, instead of prosecuting the president once he replaced him, Führer Obama said there would be no prosecution, and he went on to expand the spying program exponentially, effectively shielding are shredding beyond recognition the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable searches and seizures, which had been a leading rallying issue for the revolutionists of 1776. President Obama and another of his actions on his own initiative has moved beyond the illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, launching illegal wars against Libya, Yemen, and Pakistan, largely through the use of American military aircraft, cruise missiles, and especially pilotless drones. In addition to being illegal acts of war against nations that pose no imminent threat to the U.S., these clear acts of war have caused vastly disproportionate civilian deaths. Reportedly, as many as 40 civilians, including many children, are being killed by drone strikes in Pakistan for each of the supposed targeted, quote, terrorists. Just the disproportionality of such collateral damage is itself a heinous war crime, leaving aside the illegality of such strikes being conducted by the U.S. within the border of a sovereign nation, Pakistan, not at war with the U.S. Another one. The president and his surrogates, including Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, have committed one of the gravest of the crimes in the world, a crime against peace under the UN Charter, which is a signed and Senate-ratified treaty in the law, as it's the law of the land under our Constitution, by threatening a war of aggression against the nation of Iran. Under the Charter's terms, it is the number one war crime to attack a nation that does not pose an imminent threat to the attacker, and a nearly equally grievous crime to threaten such an attack, as the President and his Secretary of State have done on multiple occasions, warning Iran that all options are on the table should Iran not halt its totally legal nuclear fuel enrichment program. Beyond just words, the President, as Commander-in-Chief, has moved several fully armed Tomahawk cruise missile-equipped aircraft battle groups to positions off the coast of Iran, sent squadrons of new F-22 stealth fighters to airfields directly across the Persian Gulf from Iran, and positioned troops and missile-equipped submarines in invasion-ready locations, as well as providing specialized bombs and refueling aerial tankers to Israel, which itself is preparing for an attack on Iran. Yet even the most hawkish Israeli and U.S. military and intelligence agents concede that Iran is years away from having an operational nuclear weapon, even if it were to begin a bomb development program, which there is no evidence of at present. Obama has already ordered an ongoing campaign of terrorist attacks and bombings inside of Iran, which has led to the deaths of many Iranians, including civilians. Another war crime. President George W. Bush committed an impeachable crime when he had Jose Padilla, an American citizen born in New York, arrested, held without charge on a military base in South Carolina for years, and tortured mercilessly to the point of madness before he was finally ordered released to a civilian prison where he faced trial on a civilian court, in a civilian court. But President Obama has moved well beyond that travesty by issuing on April 2010, and then acting on an executive order that he claims allows him, on his sole authority, to declare American citizens to be terrorists and to have them killed anywhere in the world. Under this clearly unconstitutional order, there is no trial, no judicial ruling, just an execution order. At least two citizens have been killed in this way, including the wholly innocent young son of an American-born target, Anwar al-Awlaki, killed by a Predator drone in Yemen. President Obama is also, short of killing them, signed an order authorizing the arrest and secret detention indefinitely of American citizens, again, on his own authority, without trial or legal recourse. Another war crime, he has continued to claim the right to rendition and to torture captives on his own authority, declared to be terrorists. And another one, President Obama, as president, is responsible for a program organized out of his Department of Homeland Security last year to coordinate and help finance a nationwide violent crackdown on the Occupy movement, which swept the country in a wave of popular anger at the crimes of the U.S. financial industry and the massive corruption of the political process. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people who were peacefully exercising their First Amendment rights to assemble, speak, and seek redress were battered, shot, gassed, pepper sprayed, beaten, arrested, and jailed, not to mention falsely prosecuted 2 months later on bogus charges, by local, state, and sometimes federal police, urged on by the central government's internal security agencies. Participants in these legitimate protests have been photographed, investigated, spied on, subjected to the deceits of agent provocateur, and are now in databases in federal, state, and local computer systems where they are classified as national security threats, making a mockery of the claim that America is still a free democratic society. Another point, as a special category of crime, this repression orchestrated by the White House through its Homeland Security and Justice, departments, targeted the press with clearly identified reporters, even including those from major corporate news organizations, being subjected to arrest, having their cameras snatched or destroyed, or at a minimum being forcibly removed from the scene of repressive police actions against demonstrators. One of the protesters, Gabriella Ripley Phelps, still has not had her cell phone returned to her, which presumably may have some photos or pictures of police abuse during the December 8th destruction of the San Lorenzo campground. So it's happening in Santa Cruz, folks, as well as elsewhere around the country. Come tomorrow to the December, May 4th Friday rally at the courthouse at 2 o'clock and stand up against this. Say no to this kind of collusion with this kind of repression that's happening all over the place. Another thing that Obama has done, and again, this is a focus on Obama, but we should also look very closely at our local officials, initially lying to the American public about the goals of the raid, ordered the slaying, not the capture, of Osama bin Laden, the alleged mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks. And I'm almost at the end of my hour. This is an article you can read in Counterpunch. And it's online. The name of the article by Dave Lindorf, again, is Real Politics Must Be in the Streets, The Constitutional Crimes of Barack Obama. Let's see here. I think we have a caller. Hey there, caller. Are you with me?
Yes. Hey, Robert. Matthew here in Fresno.
Go ahead, Matthew.
Hey, just real quick. I mean, there's not a lot, in a sense, to add to a lot of those various points that you were just blazing off there. I tuned in just during part of it. I haven't been listening for too long, but I just did want to say that there was some interesting work that Seymour Hersh has done recently. I think it was like in the New Yorker online, this article that he wrote that by definition, just cut and dried, shows that the U.S. government supports terrorism by its own definition on the state. And this has happened many, many other times. I'm just saying it's a recent, really clear-cut example. The Iranian group that's on the State Department list of terrorist organizations that it came out that the government had been training in Nevada secretly, that then has been responsible for this terrorist activity against the Iranian nuclear scientists, as you had just a bit referred to. It's just interesting to me. Not only is it a travesty that these men have been blown up, that's the main point, is the human cost of it, but interestingly, it's cut and dried then. By definition, our government is supporting terrorism. They are terrorists, and it's just by definition. I mean, if anybody wants to deny that, it's just dumb. It's just some semantics, and all intelligence is breaking down. So it's a really important thing. So anything, we just turn it directly back against them. Anything that's ever said, didn't you hear? It's been proven that the U.S. government is a terrorist. You haven't heard that? And just that is the actual truth.
Don't let
people turn it around on you. You know,
I actually was reluctant to read this article because it is really pretty much well known. And the article that I probably should have read here is the city of Santa Cruz forces Bass Nectar to cancel at the Civic Auditorium. I don't know if you know about this. It's happened here recently. I mean, this, what does this mean? Well, this is a large group that is being told. I mean, it's a famous group by a local Santa Cruz artist, Lauren Ashton of Bass Nectar, who last year they did a concert. I'm not a fan of Bass Nectar, probably would hate it, actually. But I note that they I had an interest in Bass Nectar because some of the people with the Santa Cruz 11 have some connections with them, and they want to be, I think, supportive of the Santa Cruz 11. So okay. Tomorrow there was a sold-out Civic Auditorium event that was shut down because Danette Shoemaker would not agree to allow them to play past 10 o'clock at night, even though they'd done that last year with few, if any, complaints. And there's a story about this in the Sentinel. This is
okay.
This may sound rather trivial compared to assassinations, terrorists, drone strikes, but in fact, it exemplifies the local kind of repression that's coming down, and people can read about this on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. I think we're going to run out of. I'm going to have to run out. We're going to run out of time here in a moment.
I'm going to let you go, and I just want to say no. But that's an important thing, and it's not like one or the other, and it does come down to a very local level. And there's a lot of oppression that comes down. Like even in one of your emails recently, I saw that Officer Headley had turned up, you know, in one of those Santa Cruz 11, you know, and I've been brutalized by Officer Headley, and I was like, okay, you know, he's still, you know, so no. I mean, there's no reason to make any local issue seem trivial, and it has a direct line. And I just don't want to be someday in one of Alex Jones. Well, I mean, wouldn't be Alex Jones, but the prison camps that Alex Jones tries to warn us about. You know what I mean? Because as much as there's no logical reason for any of us to be deemed as terrorists, and it's actually silly putty, mental silly putty. The fact is, they don't have any arguments. It's just a might makes right thing, and we need to defend our rights.
Thank
to
you.
The extent that never happens. You know. So
all right.
Cheers.
All right, man. Yeah, of course, you don't have to be put into a prison camp to be intimidated and controlled. People who are threatened with felonies, such as the Santa Cruz 11, and those even who aren't, such as those watching these felony prosecutions, the hundreds of people that walked in and out of that 75 River Street Bank, people who are in protests who wonder if anything that they do in a protest that might be technically construed as a violation of some ordinance or law can suddenly become the basis months later for a felony conspiracy charge. This is really what's at stake in these prosecutions that are happening to me and 10 others, and that are going to be talked about tomorrow, if you're interested, down at the county courthouse, 2 o'clock. Brown Berets are coming out in solidarity. They've organized this event. We encourage you to come on down and be a part of this event. There's also going to be a hearing on Monday, on Tuesday, the 8th. Isaac Collins, of course, is being dragged into the trumped-up drug war with felony marijuana charges. At 8 o'clock in the morning, it's Isaac Collins, the Lyrical Eye, an Occupy Santa Cruz activist. At 9 o'clock, two other reporters, Alex DeRosi and Bradley Stewart, who some say are activists and others say are objective reporters. And I think they're both in many ways at different times. But in this situation, they're going to be moving for a dismissal of all charges. And I'd like to see that happen. We'll see. Judge Burdick seemed to see through.